Right, next week there's not going to be a shiur because 1 week from tonight is my sister's wedding, Ezra Shem, so I'm busy that night. But God willing, in 2 weeks, again, we'll continue with the shiur. Not sure yet what the topic's going to be in 2 weeks. When today's topic went out via email, someone emailed me asking what prompted the topic of Kedushas Pesach Knesset. If there's something that I saw, something that happened, and I said, you know, if I wanted to say something because I was upset about anything that was going on, I wouldn't wait for the Tuesday night shiur to say. That's not the best way to get the word out, probably. But the only thing that really prompted the topic was that I was looking through the Sefer Minchas Asher on Bamidbar, looking for topics that relate to the parsha, hoping to find something relevant. And he has, based on Parshas Balak, Matavu Alecha Yaakov, he has a discussion of Kedushas Pesach Knesset, Kedushas Pesach Medrash. Because Matavu Alecha Yaakov, the Ohel of Yaakov, refers to, at least Chazal understand, that it refers to Bati Knesios, it refers to a shul. So the way I'm going to structure the shiur is that first we're going to establish that there's a clear connection between a shul and the Beis HaMikdash. That a shul serves as a model of the Beis HaMikdash, both in terms of halacha, as well as in terms of its basic structure, the way it's set up. Once we've established, I'll try to go through one idea about why that's so, about what the exact connection is, meaning what do we exactly mean when we say a shul is a mikdash ma'at? In what sense is it like a Beis HaMikdash? In what sense is it not like a Beis HaMikdash? Because we're going to see that for many halachos, it's similar to, but not quite the same as the Beis HaMikdash. So it's just to be magdir, we're going to try to come up with a good geder for what the relationship exactly is. And then we're going to go through some practical issues that relate to shuls, both important issues that, that just come up, as well as certain very famous tshuvas on the topic, on topics relating to the structure or the setup of a shul. So we'll start from the beginning. Gemara Maseches Megillah, the way I set up the sheet, if you see, it's not an outline followed by marmakomos. I put the marmakomos into the outline, so we'll just go in order of the outline. The Gemara Maseches Megillah at the very top says in Daf Chav Tes, "Vayi lechem mikdash lahem mikdash ma'at." Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Elu batei knesios batei midrash shebe bavel. The Gemara darshins the pasuk that speaks about a mikdash ma'at and says mikdash ma'at is a reference to shuls and batei medrash in Bavel outside of Eretz Yisrael. That's what we mean by mikdash ma'at. So clearly, right there in the pasuk in the Gemara, we're equating the Beis HaMikdash to a shul. So we're going to give Rav Asher Weiss in his piece on the topic has 12 examples of where you see that a shul and a Beis HaMikdash are related to each other, halachically. I'm not going to go through all 12 of his examples. I'm going to mention some that he doesn't have, that Rav Shechter brings up in his piece in Eretz HaTzvi on the topic of Kedushas Pesach Knesset. But we're going to first go through 5 halachic connections between them, and then 7, it happens to be 12 in total, but then 7 connections, structural connections, clear connections between Beis HaMikdash and Beis HaKnesses, and some of them are Nogei L'maisa. First one is actually Nogei L'maisa. The halach is that in Beis HaKnesses you don't need a mezuzah. Many shuls do have a mezuzah on the door of the shul, and they're one of two reasons why shuls have a mezuzah. Either because they don't want to give the room the full status of Kedushas Pesach Knesset, because they want to be able to eat there, they want to be able to hold other functions there, so they want to hold back a little on the level of the Kedushas Pesach Knesset, and if you're going to do that, it's not really a Pesach Knesset, they'll put a mezuzah on it. The other svara why they do it is a less good reason, and that is that a lot of times when shuls are being built, they come up with dedication opportunities. And one of the great dedication opportunities is mezuzah on the main sanctuary. And people give a lot of money to dedicate the mezuzah on the main sanctuary. So they put up a mezuzah, but it's not really halachically required, and probably you shouldn't do it if it's not halachically required. So, certainly just for the dedication opportunity, they should probably come up with some other dedication opportunity rather than just mezuzah on the main sanctuary. Now, it happens to be in this shul, we put up mezuzahs on the doorways coming in, because the mezuzah doctor said that his guess is that even if we try at first to treat it with the proper full impact of Kedushas Pesach Knesset in terms of the no eating and no other functions, he doesn't think we're really going to last that long doing that because something's going to come up, we're going to need the space. Happens to be, so far so good. I mean, when we had a defensive driving course, it was upstairs. Kiddush is always upstairs. So we're pretty good about it. But nevertheless, he thought that to be cautious, he thought that we should put up mezuzahs. So we did, we put up mezuzahs. But technically speaking, we really didn't have to. The question is, why? Why does a shul not need a mezuzah? So Pashup Shat, the Hartzvi, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, quotes from Rashi, Maseches Yuma, that Pashup Shat is that a mezuzah is a chiyuv on a base tira, but not on a public place. And since there's no bailim on a public place, there's no one that's chayiv in mezuzah. There's no owner of the place, it's a shul, it's for the public, and therefore there's not going to be any chiyuv mezuzah. However, he quotes from the Rambam, if you look about halfway down that source in the Tshuvas HaTzvi, says, Ulam Rambam Hilchos Mezuzah Mashma, Shetama Patur Shal Mezuzah Beis HaKnesses, Hu Mishum Dava Kelishchos V'Ha'azaros, She'ein Bahem Beis Dira, Shepturim Lufi She'im Kodesh. He says, really, the reason the shul doesn't need a mezuzah is because it's like the lishchos and the azaros of the Beis HaMikdash, which because of its elevated level of Kedusha, doesn't require a mezuzah. And a shul is the same way. It has this elevated level of Kedusha, like a Kedusha space on Mikdash, just a little bit less. And because of that, it doesn't require a mezuzah. So that's one very clear halacha connection. Another interesting halacha connection is we know that there's a mitzvah saseh d'oraisa to build the Beis HaMikdash. Is there a similar mitzvah saseh d'oraisa to build a shul? So Rav Asher Weitz quotes, B'stechem in marechus haklal mos beiz mem dalid, Herich ladun im yesh mitzvah say livnos beis knesses. He quotes that the stechemet is done on this issue, whether there's a chiyuv to build the Beis HaKnesses, not a chiyuv, a mitzvah to build the Beis HaKnesses, and he points out that it seems to be a machlokas, and he says that there are many poskim that hold it is, many poskim that hold it's not. Even if it's not, it's at least a hechsher mitzvah. But again, on a halachic level, at least there are some that hold that if there's a mitzvah to build the Beis HaMikdash, so mele nowadays there's a mitzvah to build a shul. And again, a reflection of the fact that the shul is a mikdash ma'at. On the flip side, there's an issa d'oraisa to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Now you would think that's an unnecessary issa, we would know on our own not to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, but there's an issa d'oraisa of lo sasun kein Hashem Elokeichem. It's an interesting way the Torah tells us the issa. The Torah says, this is what you're supposed to do to avodah zarahs. You're supposed to eradicate them and destroy them and get rid of them and burn them. And lo sasun kein Hashem Elokeichem. Don't do that to God. Make sure you don't do that to your own God. Do that to other people's gods, not to your own God. So we learn from there that there's an iser to destroy a Beis HaMikdash or any part of the Beis HaMikdash. Now what's interesting is when the Rambam lists in his Minyan HaMitzvos, he lists the mitzvos, he mentions that this is a mitzvah, mitzvah Losa Sei number 65, not to destroy the Beis HaMikdash or shuls. So he obviously understands that included in the iser d'oraisa of destroying a mikdash is an iser to destroy shuls. So apparently, the status of a shul as a mikdash means something in halacha. A fourth possible example is the iser mi'ila. The Yerayim writes that it's asur min haTorah to be nana from hegdish, and someone who's nana from a shul is considered as if he was moel behegdish. So he obviously doesn't mean that literally. Rav Asher Weitz points out, you can't say that he's going to be chayv a karban when he gets hana'a from a shul. If he uses a shul to get it, you know, the structure of a shul to get some other sort of hana'a, he's not going to be chayv a karban. It's not going to be the real mi'ila that we know of. But it might mean, what the Yerayim might mean, is that there's an iser da'oraisa of mi'ila, there's just no chiyuv da'oraisa of mi'ila. So you're not going to have the same punishment and the same ramifications halachically, but the iser of being nana from hegdish applies equally to a shul. And fifth and finally, halacha connection, Rav Shechter quotes in Eretz HaTzvi that there's a kivegah that writes, based on the Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, the Rambam writes that you're not allowed to plant a tree by the Mizbeach or by the Azara. Pasuk in the Torah says you're not allowed to plant a tree by the Mizbeach. Right? It says, Asheira kol eitz al Mizbeach Hashem. You're not allowed to plant a tree by the Mizbeach. The Rambam quotes at La'alacha and says you're also not allowed to plant a tree anywhere in the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash. Beinil and Srak, Beinil and Machal. It could be a tree that bears fruit, doesn't bear fruit, doesn't make a difference. You're not allowed to have trees in the complex of the Beis HaMikdash. One would think, Adrabba, would beautify it? No, that's the halacha. What the svar for the halacha is a good question. There's a beautiful Meshech Chachma on the topic, but there's no time for that Meshech Chachma right at this point in time. But nevertheless, the Rav Shechter quotes that there were poskim who held that just like it's necessary to plant a tree anywhere on the complex of the Beis HaMikdash, so too it's also to plant a tree by a shul in the Chatzer Beis HaKnesses, that the yard of the Beis HaKnesses shouldn't have a tree planted there. Unbelievable, no? And he said that Rav Soloveitchik had told him, that I had mentioned in Shir once, that when in the city of Brisk, the people wanted to plant trees in the Chatzer of the shul, and the Rabbanim didn't allow them to, until Reb Chaim came to Brisk and took over the Rabbanis in Brisk. And once Reb Chaim took over the Rabbanis, Reb Chaim was matirit. So you have a Brisk or Kula. But the previous Rabbanim before Reb Chaim, apparently didn't, they held the La'alacha. So again, you see this strong connection, even such a detail like not planting a tree, that it's going to be nogea, not only to the Beis HaMikdash, but to the Beis HaKnesses as well. That's in terms of just halachic equivalency. But there's more than that. It's also just structurally. You look at the shul, and the shul is supposed to remind us of the Beis HaMikdash. How so? So Minchas Asher quotes, he says, V'nei, in the capital letter B, Roman numeral 1, capital letter B, the second page, V'nei mahalich nifla kasav agon, Rav, I think it's from Shimon Sofer, b'michtav Sofer. In the Sefer Michtav Sofer, we quoted it recently, the Michtav Sofer was a son of the Chassam Sofer who was born to the Chassam Sofer when the Chassam Sofer was very old. He was a much, much younger brother of the Ksav Sofer, called the Michtav Sofer. So the Michtav Sofer writes the following. He says, Yisod Dvarav, Dekol Mivna Beis HaKnesses V'Tzuraso, Mechuvan Keneged Beis HaMikdash. You look at the way a shul is set up, it's meant to mirror the Beis HaMikdash. How so? Aron HaKodesh U'Bo Sifrei Torah, Keneged Kodesh HaKadashim U'Bo Luchos. The Aron Kodesh with the Sifrei Torah corresponds to the Kodesh HaKadashim with the Luchos. Amud Atvila, the place where you daven from, the Amud, Kenegan Mizbeach HaKtorah Shebehechal. That corresponds to the Mizbeach HaKtorahs in the Hechal. Menorah Bedarim, even go so far as to say the menorah that we light for Chanukah, which we keep in the southern wall of the Shul, is Kenegan the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Habima Shebemerkaz Beis HaKnesses, and the Bima, which is in the center of the Shul, that's Kenegan Mizbeach HaChitzon. That's Kenegan the Mizbeach HaChitzon. And therefore, he says, unbelievable, I never knew this. He says, V'lachein nahgu lasos bimazu mugvahas. That's why in many shuls, not in ours yet, maybe one day, they have a bima that's elevated, right? That you step up to the bima. There is a step or two up to the bima. Why? Lasos b'kashem sha'olim l'mizbeach al gabei ha'keves. Just like we have the setup in the Beis HaMikdash, is that to go up to the mizbeach, there's a ramp, a very large, long ramp, go up to the Mizbeach, but it's elevated to go up to the Mizbeach. It's not just there. So at least the Mizbeach HaChitzon, right? The Mizbeach HaPnimi, the Mizbeach HaZahav is very small. You just stand right next to it. You don't have to be elevated. But by the Mizbeach HaChitzon, you need to be elevated. So there's this major ramp. So that's why the Minhag developed to have a heightened Mizbeach. Now, it could be for practical reasons also, that you need to be heard from the Mizbeach, and therefore you want to be in a higher location so people can hear. Also, people can see the Sefer Torah at Hagba, etc. But when it comes to the Amud, it's the opposite, though. When it comes to the Amud Atzvila, it's Mimamakim Krasicha. It's the halach is that it's supposed to be lower down. It's supposed to be like in a pit a little bit. That when people build a shul, really ideally they should make like a little bit of a decline into the area right in front of the Amud. But he says that's why the Bima is elevated, and he says, unbelievable, there's a halacha that when a person goes through a particular danger, so when the Beis HaMikdash was around, we would bring a Karban Todah. Nowadays, we don't bring a Karban Todah. What do? We say Birchas HaGomel, right? So when do we say Birchas HaGomel, and where do we say Birchas HaGomel? So we say Birchas HaGomel by the Bima. Right, usually after an aliyah or something like that. What does Birchas HaGomel have to do with an aliyah? What does it have to do with the bima? You should be able to say it just like, right, when a woman says Birchas HaGomel after she has a baby, she go up to the bima? No, you just pull over 10 men, say Birchas HaGomel, and that's it, and you're done. You know, there's no going to the bima. It's a bracha like any other bracha. Every time you make shechianu, you go on the bima. So what's the idea of birchas hagomel right by the bima? So says the Michtav Sofer, no, that's exactly it. The bima is our mizbeach. So in lieu of the korban todah, which is brought on the mizbeach, the birchas hagomel, which is supposed to be the in place of the korban todah, is dafka brought by our mizbeach. And our mizbeach is our bima. So that's how he understands. He says the whole structure of a shul is patterned after the Beis HaMikdash. And there are many examples of this. Rav Shechter quotes many of them. Rav Asher Weiss quotes others, that the door of the shul is supposed to be in the back. You're not supposed to have a door of the shul coming in on the side. The door of the shul is supposed to be in the back where you face the aron. The aron is where people are supposed to face. Ideally, the aron should be in Mizrach, but where you face the aron, so it's that, and that's also mechuban keneged the Beis Hamikdash. That's exactly mimicking the Beis Hamikdash. Similarly, the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, and again, the Mishnah Berurah quotes that this halacha isn't really so well observed today. But the halacha in Shulchan Aruch is if you're going to build a shul, you should build it on the highest point in the city. Find the highest peak in the city and build a shul on top of that peak, on top of that point. If I'm not mistaken, in Rehovot, where my grandfather lives and my uncle lives, the big shul, the Beis Knesset HaGadol in Rehovot, is right on top of a hill. It's at the highest point of the city. They're actually Mekayim, this din. But again, that too is so that structurally it should resemble the Beis HaMikdash. Not only that, Rav Shechter also points out that just like in the Beis HaMikdash, there was an Ezras Nashim and a separate place for men, separate place for women. So too in the Beis HaKnesses, that's why we need to have a Mechitza, separate place for men, one of the reasons. Separate place for men, separate place for women, because the Beis HaKnesses is supposed to be like the Beis HaMikdash. Not only that, just like in the Beis HaMikdash, there was only one Aron. You're only supposed to have one Aron in the Beis HaKnesses. If a shul has, let's say, a large wall to fill up, so you would think maybe put an aron there, an aron there, it's all on the Mizrach wall. No, Shadaf could be one aron on the wall, Rav Shechter points out. And then he says, if you look at number 6, he says, Va'ach de'a achas yesh paposkim, shekemosha azara haisa beribua, just like the azara was a rectangular shape, kemokin tsuras beis haknesses tzricha lios beribua. So too, when you build a shul, it should be in a rectangle. And usually it's that way anyway, but a lot of times you find a shul that like stadium seating, in a circle or an octagon or something where it's all seats facing the same place. Well, aside from the fact that that's not a good idea in terms of the practical element of people having to face Mizrach when they daven, and if everyone's facing each other, so it doesn't work out so well, and people have to stand at odd angles in order to face the right direction in such shuls. But it could be that the reason the minhag is that you have to have, that it should dafka be in a rectangular shape, is that it's supposed to be similar to the Beis HaMikdash. And finally he says that just like it's aser to be mishana the tzura, to change at all the tzura of the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to be mishana the tzura of the Beis HaKnesses, and you can't add other structures inside the Beis HaKnesses. And he says there were poskim that held, Rav Shechter points out, there were poskim that held that you can't build a chuppah inside a Beis HaKnesses because that's considered a change in the structure of the Beis HaKnesses. But whether we hold like all of these things or some of these things or what, it's irrelevant. The point is that we have it very firmly established that the Beis HaKnesses is a mikdash ma'ad in the sense that many halachas of the Beis HaKnesses are clear copies or applications of a halacha in the Beis HaMikdash, and the structural build of the Beis HaKnesses is very clearly meant to mirror the build of the Beis HaMikdash, how the Beis HaMikdash is built. So what's Pshata? What does Mikdash Ma'at mean? What exactly is the Geder over here? So Rav Shechter has the following beautiful Geder that I think works out very nicely, and it's Meduyuk in the Gemara. If you look in Roman numeral number 2 by Eretz HaTzvi, he says, Ubibir inyan zeh. There may be a number of typos here because I typed this rather quickly this afternoon. He says, "Ubibir inyan zeh to mikdash ma'at." Regarding just clarifying, what does mikdash ma'at mean? He says, "Shamati mikvod mori v'rabi agrit salvechik de kol inyan hamishkan va'amikdash hu lios lanu makom yuchad lihivaid sham imashchina." What's the idea of both the Beis HaMikdash and the shul? It's to have a place where we can meet God. That's it. That's what a shul is. That's what a Beis HaMikdash is. It's true in both places. Ella, so what's the difference between them? Why is the shul different than the Beis HaMikdash? Sha'hevdel shebineim hu, shebeis HaMikdash hu beis HaShem. V'shama anachnu mevakrim etzlo lihivaid ito yisbarach. The Beis HaMikdash is us going to visit God in His house. The Beis HaKnesses is God coming to visit us in our house. They're both meeting places between Klal Yisrael and the Ribbono Shel Olam. Beis HaMikdash is on His turf. Beis HaKnesses is on our turf. And that's why he says, you'll see in the halacha, that in the Beis HaMikdash there are certain halachos of kavod that apply in the Beis HaMikdash that do not apply in the Beis HaKnesses. Because the Beis HaKnesses, the rules of kavod, of etiquette in the Beis HaKnesses, are essentially those rules that would apply when you're a guest in a person's house. Not in the Mikdash, not in God's house, but in another person's house. The Beis HaKnesses is viewed as the people's house. So when we're in a shul, we have to give it the same respect that we would when we're in another person's house. For instance, the halacha is that you're not supposed to walk in with dirty shoes to shul. Why shouldn't you walk in with mud on your shoes to shul? Besides for the fact that you got to have some rachmanas on whoever's going to have to clean it up and you don't want to make a mess in the place. But also, the svara is that you don't walk into somebody else's house with dirty shoes. If you have mud all over your shoes and you walk into the front door of someone else's house, you always have the decency to say, I don't want to walk in, I don't want to mess up anything over here, or should I take off my shoes, or something like that. You certainly don't want to mess up the house, you don't want to track mud all over somebody's house. And that's the rule in a shul as well. However, we said, ma beso, the Gemara says in Brachos, ma beso a kapandarya kapadin a sharkiko min a lo kapid, we're allowed to wear shoes in shul. In the Beis HaMikdash, you're not allowed to wear shoes. Right? Why? Because you're allowed to wear shoes when you go to someone's house. Most people prefer it. Right? You wear shoes when you come to their house. You're not supposed to, you don't have to take off your shoes to go into somebody else's house. But that's the geder. Whatever is etiquette and respectful when you go into somebody's house for an important meeting, right? That's what you would do in the Beis HaKnesses. The Beis HaMikdash is a much higher standard. The Beis HaMikdash, so it used to be when they had dirt floors, in the Beis HaKnesses you were allowed to spit on the floor. Because in people's houses they weren't makbid, arikika lo kapadinshi. They weren't so makbid if you would spit on the floor because it was dirt floors anyway. Nowadays, obviously, we are makbid arikika. Why? Halacha changed? No, the halacha is the same. The halacha is however you treat somebody else's home, when you're invited to someone else's home. So based on that, Rav Soloveitchik held, Rav Shachter quotes, that during the wintertime, very often people will walk in with galoshes or boots or rubber coverings for shoes during the wintertime. Normally when you walk into someone else's house and you're wearing galoshes or something, you would take it off at the front door. You would not walk through their house wearing them. So Rav Soloveitchik held that if this geder is correct, that whatever you're not supposed to do in someone else's home, you're not supposed to do it in a shul, so you shouldn't walk into a shul with galoshes. You can, you should bring an extra pair of shoes or something and change into shoes in the coat room or something before you go into the shul itself, because that's the level of kavod you have for a shul. So that I was always aware of, because that Rav Shechter writes in Eretz Tzvi. Then I came across last week in the Sefer Mipnini Arav of Hanhagos of Rav Soloveitchik. He has another unbelievable application of this. Said, if you invite someone to your house, so again, we're assuming it's the kind of guest where he's not already like a Ben Bias, where it's not like a best friend who's been to your house 1,000 times, even though we are in the shul 1,000 times, but the type of kavod we're supposed to show the shul is the type of kavod we would show to someone's house if we had an important meeting with someone in their house and we weren't always there in their house. So if someone comes, let's say someone would come to your house for an important meeting, and they, they're not that comfortable in your house yet, and you don't want them to feel all that comfortable yet in your house. They're just coming to meet with you, and you expect them to show a certain level of respect for your house. So if you sat them down in the living room and you said, excuse me for a moment, you went into the kitchen to get a glass of water or something, or to drinks or food for them, and then you come back and you don't see where he is, and you can't find the guy, and then you look in your dining room, he's not there, and you go upstairs to your bed, and there he is. He's in one of your kids' bedrooms, looking around. Oh, I'm just looking around, What are you doing? You don't look around in my house. I mean, you can look around within reason. Are you just wandering from place to place in my house? That's complete disrespect. So Rav Soloveitchik held, he said, a lot of times people, when they're in a shul, they can't sit in one place. So moving from here to there, and they're going back, and even if they're not talking, which usually it's because they're talking, but they're going from one place to the other place to the other place. So just the pacing back and forth, that's not covered for a Beis HaKnesses. You don't do that in a shul. You wouldn't do that in someone else's house. You don't do that in a shul either. You don't pace back and forth. And he said, Reb Chaim, in Valazhin, Reb Chaim used to get very upset about this, that even in the Beis Medrash, so in Beis Medrash it's more accepted that people pace up and down the aisles in the Beis Medrash, especially when you're deep in thought and you're thinking. Some people think better just by sitting and focusing. Other people need to walk in order to think. They need to move a little bit. They need to stroke their beard a little bit and walk up and down the aisles. So Reb Chaim didn't like that. He thought that in Volashin they shouldn't have been walking around so much. And he said, B'derech Melitza, you know, the Gemara says that there was the Mishnah, rather, in Avos says that one of the great miracles that they had in the Beis HaMikdash was that everyone was omid Tzfufim, that when they were standing, they were packed in tight, yet when they needed to be Mishtachaveh, there was plenty of room to be Mishtachaveh. Right? So Reb Chaim says, why is the first half a miracle? That they were omid Tzfufim, that they were standing in straight. Meaning the second half is a miracle, that there was room for them to bow. So Pashup Shad is trying to express to us that even though when they were standing there wasn't any room, right? Nevertheless, when they wanted to bow, there was room. Reb Chaim said, no, it's a great miracle, because to get the yeshiva bachurim to stand still and not to be pacing around back and forth, that itself is a nes. So he said, B'derech Melitza, he thought that that was another way to understand that Mishnah novels based on his experiences. He wasn't so happy about the fact that people would go back and forth all the time in the shul. But again, that's what we're in the Beis Medrash. But that's the idea of the kavod you have to show for basic class. If you ever need to figure out, am I allowed to do this in shul? Am I not allowed to do this in shul? Very often the answer is going to be, would I do this in someone's house if I'm not all that comfortable with? Right? And that's very often going to be the answer to whether you're allowed to do it in shul. Let's get to the practical issues. So first of all, the status of the Ezras Nashim. There seems to be a major machlokas haposkim, what level of Kedusha the Ezras Nashim has. It seems to be the Chachmas Adam writes that the Ezras Nashim doesn't have any Kedusha whatsoever. But most Achronim disagree with the Chachmas Adam. Most Achronim assume that the Ezras Nashim has Kedusha. It's just not quite the same as Kedusha's Pesach Knesses. Now, why would the Ezras Nashim have less Kedusha than the main sanctuary, than the shul itself? And this is very critical, by the way, because in a lot of shuls, you'll find that certainly on Friday nights where there aren't that many women there or aren't any women there, hopefully if there are any women there, people aren't doing this, but when there are no women there, people will just go hang out and daven in the Ezras Nashim, either because it's better for talking, they're just more comfortable, they walked in late, whatever reason, all the standard reasons why people like to end up in the Ezras Nashim. I was told in Rabbi Sabalovsky's shul in Bergenfield, they lock the Ezras Nashim when women aren't there. They don't want people going hanging out. I don't remember if it was Rabbi Neuberger Shul or Rabbi Sablovsky Shul, whichever one, but they locked the Ezras Nashim just to keep people out of there, because it's terribly bizarre for tefillah, besides for the fact that they end up talking the whole time and it ends up disrupting the tefillah. But it's wrong in terms of your own personal tefillah. You're supposed to daven in a place that has Kedusha's Pesach Knesses. And the Ezras Nashim does not have, even if it has Kedusha, which most Poskim assume it does have Kedusha, but it doesn't have the same level of Kedusha as the main sanctuary, as the Ezras Anashim. So why though? Why is that the case? Why is the Ezras Nashim on a lower level of Kedusha? So he quotes from the Tshuvas Divrei Chaim, Rav Asher Weiss quotes from the Tshuvas Divrei Chaim. He says that Yesh Kedusha Be'Ezras Nashim Shai Anashim Chayavos B'Tfilah. There is Kedusha in the Ezras Nashim because women are Chayav to Davin, but Mikol Makom Kedushas Ezras HaAnashim Gedola Mikedusha Sam Mishum Diyesh Harbe Divrei Kedusha HaNogim Beis HaKnesses Ve'Enam Nogim Be'Ezras Nashim, because many of the holy things we do, we only do in the Ezras Anashim, not in the Ezras Nashim. We'll only do in the men's section, we don't do in the women's section. Like Tkiah Shofar, Ner Chanukah, Kaddish, Kedusha, all these things are done in the Ezras Anashim, not in the Ezras Nashim. And as such, even if the Ezras Nashim does have Kedusha, which we assume it does, it's not quite the same as the Kedusha Beis HaKnesses. And that's very important halacha l'maaseh. We should realize that if we're going into the Ezras Nashim to daven, even if we're late, it's a step down. Meaning it's really not the full Kedusha Beis HaKnesses. We should be makbid to daven dafka in the men's section, not in the women's section, even if there are no women there. So much so that in Mipnine Arav, Rav Shachter quotes that they once asked Rav Soloveitchik, they had a maisa once that they built a shul and they accidentally made the men's section too big and the women's section too small. And they needed to add space from the men's section to the women's section. So you say, what's the big deal? Just move over the mechitza. Well, the problem was, if they already included it as part of the men's section, so they already kept it put it on a high level of Kedusha. Not so pashut that something that was established as the Ezras Anashim, can you be morid the Kedusha and bring it down and turn it into an Ezras Nashim? Rav Soloveitchik came up with a whole a whole way around it, but it was a little bit of acrobatics to get around this issue. He said, you have to first rope off the area for several weeks where no one goes there, and then sell it to an individual. And then that individual should sell it back to the shul, al menas that it should be the Ezra's Nashram. Some whole way around it to be able to make it that space that was originally designated for the men should be able to become designated for the women. Yeah, so that's a good question. I'll have to ask the Shaila next year. I have to figure it out.
It was done at the beginning with the intention to lower the Kedusha, so to speak, once a year. Is that considered lowering?
I don't know. I'm going to have to ask when it comes to it. Yom Narayim, when we reconfigure the whole seating in the shul, obviously we can't just leave that for the women. It's not going to be so good. Not if we want to come home. So we'll have to figure out exactly what our heter is going to be. Well, you could make the women's section smaller because then you're adding Kedusha.
No, but then how do you undo that?
Right, so that's the problem.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, that's the problem. Okay, another issue that I thought was interesting was Rav Schechter writes, as one of the ideas in terms of the Beis HaKnesses structurally resembling the Beis HaMikdash, Rav Schechter says, if you look in the bottom of, I guess, the third page, in Eretz HaTzvi, he says, "Val derech zaha yinira lahosif od v'lomar b'toras efshar dikemoshe b'migdash haya ha'aron b'toch ha'hechal v'lo rak b'samachla." Just like in the Beis HaMikdash, the Aron was in the Hechal. It wasn't near the Hechal. It was in the Hechal. It wasn't near mi b'chutz. K'mokein, similarly, b'Beis HaKnesses, eino nachon lahasir es Aron HaKodesh mitoch ha'rishush l'Beis HaKnesses, see a lot of shuls like this. What he's suggesting is that if you want to make the Mizrach wall even, right, so a lot of shuls will recess the Aron into the wall so that the wall will be even and the opening and the Aron is in the wall, it's not in the room. So he said, B'toras Efshar, it could be that you're not supposed to do that, because the structure is supposed to resemble the structure of the Beis HaMikdash as closely as possible, and therefore there should be an actual Aron in the room, not just recessed against the wall. If I'm not mistaken, one of my Talmidim told me that Rav Schechter mentioned this when he spoke at the Young Israel of Woodmir a couple of months ago, and in the Young Israel of Woodmir, it's Taka recessed into the wall, and he's standing right in front of the Aron, and he was just saying, Taras Efshar, it's at least it's possible that you're not supposed to do that if it's avoidable. To be totally honest, Rav Schechter even says it only B'taras Efshar, and no other posek says it. And not only that, Rav Moshe makes it very clear that he doesn't think it's a problem at all. Rav Moshe was asked the question not in terms of, is there a problem with having an Aron recess in the wall? Rav Moshe was asked, what if we over here wanted a little extra space? So one way we could buy space is just by expanding the whole shul. But a simpler way might be to build a little structure out right outside over here, and stick the Aron into that, and that way we'll have a couple more feet over here, a couple more feet to walk around the bima in the shul itself. Rav Moshe was asked, can you do that? Now, what's the Havamina that you can't? So the Havamina was not that you can't put the Aron in the wall. The Havamina was that if you have a makom right now that has Kedushas Aron Kodesh, so you can't go turn that into Stam Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. That was the Havamina. That's what they asked Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe said, no, there's no such din. There's no such special din of Kedushas Aron Kodesh. The makam of Kedushas Aron Kodesh is the same as Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. And he says, the Aron Kodesh is not even Tashmishei Kedusha. Pretty wild. Note, what's the definition of Tashmishei Kedusha? Anything that connects to Ksav Shel Torah, to actual written Ksav Shel Torah. Tashmishei Mitzvah are things that are used for a mitzvah but don't connect to Ksav Shel Torah. So you would think if there's one place that's Tashmishei Kedusha, it's the Aron Kodesh. He says, no, whenever you put something in the Aron Kodesh, Rav Moshe writes, it's always with the cover on the Sefer Torah, and that's the Tashmishei Kedusha, and therefore the Aron is only a Tashmish to Tashmish. So it's not real Tashmishei Kedusha anyway. So it doesn't have a status of Tashmishei Kedusha, and therefore the Makom of the Aron has the same Kedusha as the rest of the Shul, and you don't have to worry about it. What about the Bima cover? We do assume it has a status of Tashmishei Kedusha. Why does that have a status of Tashmishei Kedusha? Very simple, because the Torah is bare on the bima cover. It's uncovered and it's open, it's bare on the bima. So that's why it's going to have a status of Tashmishei Kedusha. But anyway, that's just another idea relating to this connection between the Kedusha Beis Knesset and the Kedusha's Beis HaMikdash. One more issue, and then we'll get into some of the more well-known tshuvos on topics relating to Beis HaKnesses, and that is something I referenced recently, but I didn't give you the proper source material, and that is the idea of tznius in a Beis HaKnesses. And Rav Shachter is very careful when he writes this. I didn't put this paragraph into the Mar Makomos, but the paragraph after the one I put in here, he defines what tznius is, and he's very careful to say tznius is not only about mode of dress; it's definitely part of it. Sometimes people want to deny that tznius, or want to forget that tznius is also about mode of dress, because they're aware of the broader definition of tznius being modest and humble, which is what tznius really is. But part of that is also the way we dress, right? We shouldn't deny the fact that that's also part of tznius. But anyway, he says that he noticed a trend in recent years, that even women who generally aren't so makbid about a variety of halachos of tznius, whether or minhagim of tznius, depending on which issues we're talking about, but from covering their hair to wearing stockings, things like that, women who generally in the streets would not wear stockings, would not be makbid to wear stockings, would certainly not be makbid to cover their hair. When they come to shul, they cover their hair. When they come to shul, they wear stockings. So why? He said it seemed so strange to him for so many years. He didn't understand. If you're makbid on these halachas, you're makbid. If you're not makbid, you're not makbid. Why would you be makbid in shul and not makbid elsewhere? Well, we're only frum in shul. And why dafka in the area of tznius? And he said he discovered it's really there's a half a dozen mar makomos that point to the idea that in order to achieve a sense of hashra'as hashchina, tznius is critical. That tznius, a sense of humility, a sense of modesty, is necessary in order to achieve hashra'as hashchina. So there's going to be a heightened sense of tznius in a place where we're looking for hashra'as hashchina. What are these mar makamos? He says the simplest one is the Gemara says that Shiva banim hayilal l'kimchis. There was a woman named Kimchis. She had seven sons. V'kulam shimshu b'kuna gedola. They all became Kohanim Gedolim. And everyone wanted to know, what zuchus did she do? And they asked her, the Chacham Master, what was Bamezachisa? How did you manage that? To have seven sons, all Kohanim Gedolim? Sometimes you have parents who have just these outstanding children, one after the other. And you just ask them, I've asked the parent teacher conferences once in a while when you had such parents, like, what's your secret? What do you do that you might actually get one after the other? They're all so amazing. What did you do? So Marsha points out, they asked her because her husband was a nobody, and they knew that it wasn't his zuchus, it must have been her zuchus. So they said to her, what did you do? So she said, you know what I did? Miyamai l'ro'u koros besi kilei sari. She says, I was very makbid on covering my hair, that even in my house, I covered my hair, even when no one was there. That she was very makbid on covering her hair. Is it required to cover your hair in the house, for a woman to cover her hair in the house when no one's there? No, it's not required. But that was her chumrah, and because of that, it brought kuhuna gedola into her family. Meaning, the greatest sense of Hashra'as Hashchina, the greatest level a man can meet God on, the Kuhuna Gedola, came about through what? Through an elevated sense of tznius. And Rav Shach quotes a bunch of other Mar Makomos that also point to this idea that tznius, lack of tznius, causes Siluk Hashchina, and tznius causes Hashra'as Hashchina. So he says, that's the idea. That's why, he said, I don't suggest not being makbid on tznius outside of shul, but there's certainly an idea of being extra makbid inside of shul, where you're looking for a sense of Hashra'as Hashchina. Okay, now let's just go through some of the more interesting tshuvos that came to mind when I wanted to come up with halachically, not necessarily relevant, but I thought interesting tshuvos on topics relating to a shul. So first of all, Rav Moshe has a very famous tshuva about a seeing eye dog in a shul. If you have a blind man, is he allowed to bring a seeing eye dog into shul? So it's not so, how often does it come up? It doesn't come up that often. Many blind people are able to get around without a dog. They have a stick, they have people that help them. So it's not the most relevant, but I was intrigued because I came across in Rav Shachter Sefer Mipnini Arav, where he gives a little bit more background to the Shaila. Apparently, there was a lawsuit about this. Rav Shachter writes that a blind man bought a seat for Yom Noraim in the shul, and he walks into the shul on Yom Noraim with his seeing eye dog. And people in the shul see that he's about to walk in with the sitting eye dog, and they say, "I'm sorry, sir, you can't bring the dog into shul." And he said, "What do you mean I can't bring the dog into shul? I'm not just bringing, you know, Sparky my pet. I'm bringing my sitting eye dog because that's why I get around. That's the only way I can know where I'm going." So they said, "No, but no pets in shul. You can't bring a pet into shul. You're not allowed to bring a dog into shul. We're sorry." He said, "Well," and he told them where they can go, and he marched right into the shul to take his seat. And the people were upset with him, you know, being so stubborn, and they got up and they physically, bodily removed him, and they hurt him, and they damaged him. And he sued them in court for hurting him, for the damages, for throwing him out of the shul. So he sued him in secular court. So the judge in the court, Rishabta writes, I mean, Pnine Arav, the judge said the law in secular court will depend on whether in American law, would depend on whether the understanding in a shul is, the Jewish law is that you're not allowed to have a dog in shul, meaning who is right. Who is right is not going to be determined by American law, it's going to be determined by what is understood in a shul. Are you allowed to have a pet in a shul in this situation, or you're not allowed to have an animal in the shul in this situation? So the judge asked Rav Soloveitchik what he thought, what the halacha is. He wanted to know from Rav Soloveitchik what the halacha is. Can you have a dog in the shul? Now, Rav Soloveitchik could have told him it's machlokas me and Rav Moshe, but I don't know how the judge would have ruled in that situation, knowing that it's machlokas Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe, but it happens to be such a machlokas. Rav Soloveitchik holds that it's aser, that you're not allowed to have a dog in the shul, even if it's a seeing eye dog. Rav Moshe has an unbelievable tshuva, where he tries to show that, based on Yerushalmi, that having a dog in shul, having a pet in shul, is on the same level as eating and drinking in a shul. It's not considered more of a bizayon than eating and drinking. And Rav Moshe says, have you ever been to a Hasidic shtibel where they don't have a l'chaim on a yard site? Where they don't have a little kichel and a l'chaim on a yard site? Where they don't have a kiddush in the shul sometimes? You ever see? He says, look, I don't really understand why it's okay, meaning it must be that the minhag has become that we paskin that it's okay to have food in shul once in a while. So if it's okay for us to have food in shul once in a while, Rav Moshe says, who's to say that you shouldn't be able to have a dog in shul? He says, Kal v'chomer over here, we're not just stop doing it for enjoyment. He's not bringing a pet in. This isn't, it's l'tzarech ha'tfil. He said, it could be that the whole discussion of the bizayon of bringing an animal into the shul is only when the animal stop being brought into the shul. But if you bring the animal in l'tzarech ha'tfil, this guy can't daven unless he brings the animal in, unless he has the animal to lead him around. So it's a tzorech hatfila, so then it could be that it's not even in the parsha of a bizayon, Rav Moshe says. And Rav Moshe goes on to say that besides that, if we're not going to be matirit, he said there's a major shasad chak. Because if you're not going to be matirit, the guy is going to miss Kriyas HaMegillah, he's going to miss Kriyas HaTorah every time, everything you do with the minion. And can you imagine the Agmas Nefesh for a Jew and a frum Jew to not be allowed to daven Yom Noraim? He writes. Now, I don't know if Moshe wrote the Shuvah in response to this lawsuit story that Rav Shechter talks about, or if it was a separate tshuva, and just coincidentally he happens to talk about, but the example he gives leads you to believe that he was aware of this, you know, of this particular case. Where he says, the Agmas Nefesh of not being able to daven Yom Noraim? You're gonna be makbid about that. You can't do that to a person. You have to let him daven. And then he quotes a cute raya at the end, which he admits is not really a good raya. But the Gemara in Brachos Daf Samach Beis says that Abaye meravile imra. Abaye would raise the sheep umalamadaso shaholichim otamid. Abaye had a pet sheep that was holichim otamid that went wherever he went. So Moshe says, where was Abaye going? I was half the most of the day in the base medrash. Okay, so he worked a little bit. But you would say, Tamid? The sheep was with him always. So the sheep probably walked with him came into the base medrash every day, brought a sheep next to him and sat there learning right next to him. I don't know, it's hard to picture that was really. So Rav Moshe says, okay, maybe it's not, Tamid doesn't really mean in shul and in the base medrash. But he says he thinks that it's a davar pasha, that it's got to be mutter. And the guy should sit near the door so as not to be mafriya other people. I mean, it's considered to be, right, it's spoken about in very negative terms in Tanakh, certainly. But that's not a halachic consideration, apparently. All right, we're not going to get to the weddings, so just one more ha'ara that we'll close with. There's a discussion regarding the paroches, whether you can have a split paroches with lettering on it that makes a word. And then the paroches splits down the middle. Rav Moshe says something so unusual in his tshuva. Rav Moshe says, But anyway, to have a split paroches is against the minhag Yisrael. The minhag Yisrael is you only have one paroches. So you shouldn't have a split paroches anyway, so there's nothing to talk about. And it's such an odd comment. I spoke to Rav Shechter about this once. I said, what's Pshah? Where do you find that that's a minhag Yisrael, that you have one piece paroches? Rav Shechter said, Adrabah, go back to the idea that the Beis HaKnesses is supposed to mirror the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, they had two paroches. Right? It wasn't covering the Aron, but they had, by the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they had two curtains, one right in front of the other, that overlapped a little bit, right? Next to each other, that overlapped. That's how it worked. It overlapped a lot, but that's how it worked in the Beis HaMikdash. So the same Minhag Yisrael have only one paroches. He thought it was so unusual for a Moshe to have a comment like that. Okay, there's a good tshuva about flags and the Magen David. Okay, maybe some other time we'll get to it. We'll have to stop here.